What makes someone a balanced leader? Hey there, this is your friend and guide, Caroline. On today's Balanced Leader, my incredible guest and I share strategies to help you lead with confidence, stay resilient, and avoid burnout. This isn't just about leadership. It's about thriving holistically, in mind, body, and spirit. Ready to recalibrate? Well, let's dive in and create the balanced life you deserve. Hello and welcome back to today's Balanced Leader. Help me welcome Lori Fainer. She's an executive coach and advisor who's been in the trenches with senior leaders navigating massive change. And together, we're pulling back the curtain on what really happens behind closed doors, the doubts, the decisions, and the daily balancing act between purpose and pressure, all to help leaders navigate the noise and change without losing themselves. So let's be honest, leadership right now, it's a lot. You're expected to be calm when things are chaotic, visionary when the future's unclear, empathetic but decisive, and somehow with all that, you're still expected to hit your targets, keep the team inspired and performing, and not completely lose yourself in the process. And that's the unfiltered reality of leading today, and why both Lori and I wanted to dive into just two leaders having a real conversation about what it takes to stay grounded, human, and effective when the world won't stop spinning. So, Lori, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here today.
No, thank you. And I love these conversations. Great. I don't think we spend enough time kind of reflecting on the leadership structures that we have and behaviors that we have today. I think we just dive in and suddenly you're called a leader and you just have to be able to do all the things. So very excited that we can kind of peel back the covers a little bit and talk a little more deeply about what are the capabilities, the behaviors, the issues that leaders are really facing.
Yes. And I think the golden nugget is truly that what you just said is where real growth happens. It allows us to pause, reflect, and choose to respond instead of react. And as leaders, isn't that what we all aspire to be? But there's so many pressures today. And so I know my leaders get to hear from me on a regular basis, but what do you see as the biggest pressure point for leaders right now?
You know what? It's so interesting. I've been doing a lot of reflecting on just the leaders that were really important to me. So as I've been going through this year, coaching organizations, coaching teams, coaching clients, it's really just struck me that, you know, the real issue that I think everybody is sort of facing is like being all things to everybody. And how are you all things to everyone? And so in this reflection, what I've been doing is every Wednesday, I post on LinkedIn about a leader or a colleague or a peer that I've worked with, where there's been a lesson I took away. There's been something that stuck with me over the last, you know, 20 plus years of career that I actually haven't thought about and been intentional about before. I found I get asked a lot, like, well, what does leadership mean to you? And what are the core skills? And what's been made possible with this reflection is actually remembering what it was like. What it was like. Yeah. Or executive, what it was like when I was first starting out, what was it when I was middle management, and being able to kind of put that hat on again of what did that mean to be all things to all people, and how did I develop and grow to be able to progress while still staying true to myself and my values. So long-winded way of saying, I think that helping to offer real human stories about how people were strong leaders, how they failed, how they came back, what that resilience looked like. I think that's a really great antidote to the thing, which is leaders have to be all things to all people.
Yeah, what I enjoyed about what you just said is if you think about a leader, you alluded to it when we first chatted, you know, you have the skill set, therefore you become a leader. And then I call it left to sink or swim. But I think sometimes even leaders that have been in leader positions for so long, they're afraid to raise their hand and ask for help because they feel like they should know. Yeah. I should know that already. But everybody's experiences are different. And I always say, you know what? I'd rather you raise your hand and we work through it together than for you to stress out over it, because The one thing I've learned over my many years is nobody has all the answers. So why aren't we working together more often? And so what do you think is, I know for me what it is, but what's one truth that you wish every executive would admit about leadership today?
That they don't have all the answers, and that it's okay to get curious about a problem and not just say, well, this is what we're going to do to solve it. It's okay to kind of actually hear the person who's talking to you, take a minute to understand the situation that's unfolding in front of you, and digest it before solutioning. We're taught constructs in school, and then the school goes right into a career where you got to know all the answers, you got to be the smartest person, and you got to lead with like resolve. And that is a form of leadership for sure. But there's also an opportunity to say, I hear your story, I hear what you're saying to me. Tell me more. It's that opportunity to validate when someone comes to you and says, I have a problem, and be able to say, that's really hard. Let's talk about it before we jump right into that solutioning. And I think leaders just feel the pressure to solution in the moment. And sometimes that needing to solution in the moment cuts off empathy, kindness, relationships, people. Like it's like we lose humanity a little bit in that, I think.
Yeah, and a lot of times they follow what they have always followed. So there's a way of doing things that I've always done. And sometimes we know people are afraid of change, right? So they're afraid to, everybody says, think outside the box. Well, it's easy to think
Yes.
outside the box, but do you actually put that into action? And I think that's part of, as a leader, when you can be empathetic, when you can be human, when you can be vulnerable. And when I say vulnerable, I'm talking about bringing your team in together or bringing colleagues in together and setting a meeting. Hey, Lori, I'm really struggling with this. Here's what I was thinking of doing, because you always come with a solution as a leader. But can you help me work through this? What else? What am I missing? What am I not thinking about? Because it's amazing the ideas when you open that box of allowing to be creative that will come forward when you do that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I wrote about this in one of those impactless posts, so it's fresh in my mind. There was an early leader I worked with. Her name was Hannah Yardley. She's actually the head of HR. It's a big chief people and culture officer at Achievers. And one of the things for me with Hannah is that that's how she led, just being able to get curious, ask the questions, not make you feel bad if you came up with a solution that was incorrect or you didn't have all the answers, but kind of creating that space. So that really you could unlock it in yourself. And you unlocked it in yourself because she asked good questions, she listened, she allowed you to try new things. And it was a great introduction to what, you know, a different type of leadership looked like, as opposed to what I'd always seen, which was hierarchy, smartest person in the room, clearly the most senior person. So you gotta just, you know, that's it. Whatever they say goes. It was such an unlock for me for sure.
Yes. Or you have the executive that doesn't share anything. They have an idea of where they want to get to, but they want their leaders to formulate that themselves. And yet those individuals are afraid to do that because they're not sure if it's what this individual wants. And I've seen that experience too. And it's hard to get people, easier for me because I didn't report into that individual, but harder for the people that actually report into that person to guide them to say, hey, you know what? You need to go in and have that exact conversation with them and say, listen, I know you know where you want to go. Here's what I'm thinking. Is that in line with where you want to go? Could you maybe give me some guidance? Could you, right? I guess, again, and there's nothing wrong with raising the hand before you start expending all this energy and team effort and it not be what was planned in the first place, because then it's so frustrating and it quickly, you know, knocks the confidence out of you that you're afraid to take any step after that.
Yeah, I did a lot of work when I was at Deloitte in kind of agile world and, you know, pivoting quickly and making mistakes. And mistakes are okay, and failure is actually okay because, you know, you're learning quick and you're in the like being in the soup together where you're all learning and going and doing. And there's something about that safety in that that I think is really important. But in order to have that, there's got to be trust. And it was really interesting. I was on a phone call yesterday where The person I was talking to referred to it as being, right now we are in a trust recession. And I thought that was so interesting because I do think in the absence of, as our culture around us has shifted, we now need to have new leadership behaviors that we all rally around, that this is what a good leader looks like. We're not there yet. And so in the absence of that, I think people are afraid to trust. I think everybody is a little skeptical. Everyone is really guarded. 5, 10 years ago, we talked about psychological safety all the time, and we seem to be like okay with that idea. And now it feels like, do we really need that? Is that real? And I think in that absence of that trust, it's just really hard to create an environment where people can be themselves, fail a little bit, make mistakes, put up their hand and say, hey, I actually have no idea what I'm doing right now. And it doesn't lead to good outcomes. A lot of what I deal with my clients is everything feels like conflict, whether it is or it isn't. So how do we get people to have a framework to deal with conflict so that it feels easy? Because not everything is conflict. It's okay to have a differing opinion. It's okay that, we like your solution better than my solution. That's just normal course of business. But I think everyone is so on edge these days without having some of those things we always knew to be true.
Yes, and I know it's not on the agenda for today, but at some point I would love to chat with you too about. I talk a lot about competition. There's competition in the work world, the career world, growing your career, etc. And I often coach individuals to say, we weren't meant to do anything alone, to lead alone, to run a family on our own. If you go back, communities were so important. So if I was sick, Lori would bring over soup or take my kids to school or whatever that is. You need that. And I feel like the corporate world has caused the problem where we don't have a lot of that. Hence why we're afraid to raise our hand or ask a colleague for help. And when in the corporate world, but more so now as a coach, talk a lot about, we talk about sending the elevator down. What are you doing? And we'll talk a little bit about mentorship later, but what are you doing to send that elevator down and bring people along with you? Because if you ever wanted to be that admired leader, not just strategic, but admired and respected leader, and if you ever wanted to leave a phenomenal legacy behind at the end of your career or your life, that's how you do it. You don't do it by fending for yourself or taking credit for something that somebody else created. None of that stuff. And we could probably do a whole different podcast on that.
But it's again, I just posted about that recently too, because, twofold. So there was a gentleman I worked with earlier in my career. His name was Michael Murphy, and I was coming into the practice as a manager. He was a brand new promoted senior consultant, and we were both feeling so much pressure from leadership. Me, as I got into my new role, him, taking on new responsibilities. And it didn't start well. And it was really interesting to reflect back on this time with him now. It was like 10, 15 years ago, that like, wow, we were both at loggerheads. And I remember there was one particularly bad client meeting. And afterward, I kind of pulled him into the room and said, okay, like we've got to get on the same page here. This is not working for either one of us. And we are a team. So, like, what are we doing? And years later to now, he told me that that was actually a really meaningful moment that we had that conversation and we had that honesty to build our partnership. And I think it was a really, I just think about how it was like a really tough dynamic, but it was important for me as the more senior person to say, I can't let these behaviors go. I have to face this with you and we can have it out. You can, give me the feedback. I can give you the feedback. But if we are really truly building excellence, we've got to start with these conversations. And it really transformed, I would say, this idea of protectionism. We were in competition that we first initially felt to, like, no, we are a partnership and we are honest and we have trust. And I'm not sure that had I not had some of those earlier career moments where I named it and called it and we had those conversations, I'd have, as great relationships as I do today with a lot of my former colleagues.
Yeah, talk about building trust. Because now you've opened the door for that type of dialogue where, you know what, if I don't agree with something that Loria has said, I know she's open to me going in. And I always looked at those as, when I was an executive, one as you always want to hear what everybody has to say because you're very short-sighted if you don't. Trust me, if that one person thinks that way, there's other people that think that way. So sometimes it helps you do whatever stronger, build whatever stronger, but also talk about helping somebody to grow. That person may help you grow and you may help that person grow. And I think together it just makes you stronger to be able to tackle some of the biggest challenges. And then if you think about the team that you're building, at that point, they'll part waters with you if that's what's called for, because they just so agree with the style of leadership that you are and are bought into working hard with you. And I think more leaders should take a look in the mirror every once in a while. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the steps that they can take. But I think pause is such a big thing. So, Lori, let's shift just a smidge because we're starting to get into it. But something I like to talk about is the idea of leading during what feels like that perfect storm. And we're all in that perfect storm right now. I feel like you can't talk to anybody without feeling like there's just so much going on and so much uncertainty. And, leaders in that space, which is never easy, but they're being asked to make decisions a lot of times where maybe they don't have all the information that they need. It's just a directive they're given. Maybe they don't have the guidance. Maybe they can't hold space for their teams who are overwhelmed, and they can't keep themselves steady in the process. And a lot of times leaders end up becoming the doers more than they like. So they end up just rolling up their sleeves and doing the work because the work has to get done. But it takes away from that strategic planning and the driving of the business. And we know that you can't lead from depletion. You can't inspire anyone if you're in overwhelm. And I've yet to meet a leader who operates at their best when they've abandoned their own inner steadiness because they're not coming from a valued, calm-based reaction or commentary, right? And I think that's a little bit of where I wanted to start with this conversation, because if we don't talk about what's happening inside a leader, none of the strategy that we give people matters. Because if they're in overwhelm, the strategy's not going to help. Where do you see people slipping into that reactive? And do you have any suggestions of maybe how they can come back?
For sure. It's really interesting. So in the last 12 months, I started to take courses in conflict resolution and mediation. And it was really transformative to start to think about how being in service of other people starts with you. Starts with how do you hold your container whole and make sure that you are in a good headspace, feeling good to start the day, you're showing up as your best self for the people around you so that you can really do that great work of, leading the teams, hearing what they have to say, being there for them, being present. And I think that we get so busy, we forget. And I remember having a meeting really early on in my career. I was working at a manufacturing plant in Calgary, and it was with this executive, and it was awful. It was awful. It was a really high pressure situation. It was during pandemic, so you can imagine where, you're parenting and working round the clock all the time. And I think everybody was feeling it. At the same time, the organization was going through a ton of transformation, and we got into a screaming match. This person was significantly more senior than I was. But, anybody that knows me would tell you I face confrontation head on. I like it at a 50. Most people like it at a 2. And I remember having this very intense conflict with each other. And the conflict, we get off the call, and I have to go and tell my boss, Lindsay. Hey, Lindsay, this is what took place. This is what transpired. And it was so interesting to have her say, we work in a really high stress environment. It was really tough. I'm sure you did what you needed to do in the moment. I appreciate that you're telling me, and then you're reflective, and like, I've got your back on this. Like, you were not alone in the conversation. And the reason that that became so powerful was it was the first time that somebody acknowledged that we're going to make mistakes, our emotions are going to get away from us, We work in, we're not just about work. We also have other things going on in our world. And I just found that so helpful because then now, as I start to do this work in conflict resolution, my job is to think about how best I can hold the container so that I never go into a meeting and have that happen again. Because even though it was wonderful to have this partnership with her and have her support me as my leader, fully support what happened, help me work through it, I was so disappointed in myself that I didn't have the skills or the training to be able to hold that container, that it became kind of this journey for me to how can I do that going forward? And I've really found once I've been more reflective. So, in terms of the how do you do it, it's about, I think you and I have spoken about this before, it's that intentionality. So, it's opening up your calendar and saying, what's on the docket for today? What are the things I have to show up as my best self? And what does that mean? And have I created enough space in my calendar, in my brain, to be able to do those things? If not, that's okay. Sometimes you've got meetings you have to have, but it's calling it and naming it. So if I get to a meeting with you and I'm not in the right headspace, I just need to tell you that. Hey, listen, I'm having a bit of a tough day. I really want to have this meeting with you, but I've got a lot of things going on in the background. So if I don't see myself, that's why. If my answers seem short, that's why. It's helping people to almost understand that not everything, not to take everything personally. It's not always about them. So I talk about, sometimes unconditional positive regard, the belief that everybody's showing up to do their best every day. It's hard to hold that thought when there's so much going on. So my job and being in service to other people is to remind them about that. That if I seem cold, if my answers are short and clipped, it has zero to do with them. It has to do with me. And I'm acknowledging that I can't show up for you today at 100%, but I'm here at 75 and we can pick it up next week. So I think it's really about getting honest about your own behaviors, holding yourself accountable to them, and then actually thinking, what is the most I can do for everybody in the day? If I can't do 100%, let's be honest about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about conflict, making sure you don't leave it too long. Whether you're a leader or whether it's your partner at home or your children, you don't want to let it fester. So, not leaving it till next week's meeting, not hoping it goes away, don't delay. And I love what you said around the naming it and requesting that conversation. And sometimes that's really tough. It's hard to admit to something, but I think it's so important to, if you think about life, it's a blip in time that you've just had either a conflict or a problem come up, and you want to repair that relationship that is so important to you. Leading with curiosity and not blame in a conflict is so important because you want to be able to repair it. And repairing it is not finger pointing, it's not blaming. It's more the help me understand what happened or what did maybe you need from me that you didn't get.
I was going to say, and so within that, when you sort of think about the distilled down conflict, where it sort of led me is we had talked about this. I created sort of like what is the acronym I can use with my clients to help them diffuse those situations? Because it was that memory of that interaction that I shared with you where I was like, gosh, if I would have had something I could just flash in my brain to say, here's how I would handle that differently. Because sometimes you have to, in the moment, do that, right? So I work with a lot of real estate clients. And so the acronym is actually called HOME. And so the concept is hearing fully. So listening 80%, talking 20% only, and reflecting back what you hear. So it's not enough to say, oh, yes, Carolyn, you're right. It's actually, okay, let me make sure I heard you correctly, and then repeating it back. And then you're allowing space for the other person to say, actually, you missed this part, or I didn't really mean it that way. So it's kind of that H of the home. And then the next piece of like owning your view, right? Which could be if you did make a mistake in a conflict situation, offering like a micro apology, I'm so sorry that you felt like I'm so sorry that that happened, or I'm so sorry that I did X and Y. But also within that, using some of those I feel statements. Because I had a leader years ago tell me, no one can argue with your feelings, they're your feelings. So owning the view of, well, I felt unheard. I felt misunderstood. And I felt this and this and this. That allows you to take ownership of this was the situation as I saw it. So someone can then tell you, okay, this is the situation as I saw it. So again, it's opening that dialogue, but owning where you are coming from, acknowledging where you're coming from. So to the point I made earlier, saying, I only have 70% capacity for you today. That's where I'm. And then kind of mapping the terrain under that M piece. What are the underlying needs? So really, once you've heard the situation, you've owned where you come from, it's what needs to change. What were you looking for? What was I looking for? And where was that disconnect? And that, like, two things can be true, which I find such an interesting concept that we don't always talk a lot about, where, like, I can both be sorry that I didn't give you the results you were looking for, but also believe that there was a gap in the process and that's why that happened. So two things are true. I'm sorry that I did that, but also there's clearly a problem here we should talk about. So what is the actual thing we're solving for? Reminding each other we're on the same team, we've got to solve it together. And lastly, with the E, which is the okay, now that we know what we're solving for, how are we solving it? And how are we going to put metrics in place or checkpoints in place so that we're always realigning together? So again, it's that acronym of hearing fully, owning the view, mapping the terrain, and executing with clarity. And that really allows you to stop. So as we talk about what's the pause when you're in the moment, you think home and you're like, okay, what's the first one? Listen, okay, I'm going to just take a beat, breathe, and then ask them to restate what they're saying.
Yeah,
And then
that's
from there, it's flowing in.
I like that acronym because if you think about anything to do with building relationships, conflict, any of that, the goal is around understanding, getting clarity, and then building that reconnection. And to your point earlier, you said it's not a bad thing. Healthy teams are not without conflict. They're actually teams that can repair quickly and have those honest conversations, which is where the trust and the relationship piece comes into. Because if you have that relationship and that trust with each other, you're open to being able to do that a lot more quickly. And it's amazing how fast you can work through any form of conflict when you have that trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then just a couple of quick things that I like to give leaders when I think about the overwhelm. Sometimes we're not ready to go right into that person and talk to them. And I've given individuals over different podcasts some modalities to do, but what's that 60-second centering reset? Like sitting back in your chair, feet planted, taking a couple of deep breaths, breathe in for four, hold for two, exhale for six, and noticing what's mine and what's not mine. Again, not for blame, but just to understand because it allows your nervous system to reset, which will then allow clarity to step in under a minute so that when you go to have that conversation with the individual, you're not in the defense mode. You've actually calmed down and you're being reasonable about what that conversation is going to look like. And sometimes you can't do it right away. Like you might have to wait an hour till they calm down, I calm down, because not everybody takes the steps to approach a situation in a calm manner. So just ask yourself before responding, what do I need right now? What's needed right now? What's needed most? Information, support, direction, just calm, because that gives your brain a cue around, okay, what is the true intention here? And then I often talk about the 2-minute debrief, which is after any meeting, what worked, what didn't work, and what do I need to adjust? Because if the argument happened in a meeting, you don't want to derail the meeting. You might have to come back to where afterwards. So how do you then circle around and go through everything that Lori and I just gave you so that you can reset and kind of go, okay, this is what needs to happen moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, with the calendar example, exactly that. It's kind of opening that day that's ahead of you and saying, like, what do I need? What do I need to get through this? After that really bad interaction, as I look at my day, how do I go to through the rest of the day with intention and calm and hold that container whole? So absolutely.
And anytime, and I'm putting this out to there while the leaders are listening, if you look at your calendar and you have no white time, you need to call Lori or I, because that's a problem in itself.
Yes.
Because when are you having time to even
Yeah.
think? So there's ways that you can do it, and sometimes it's just shifting habits or beliefs that you have, because everybody should have some white space in their calendar. And you need to, because things are going to come up, or your team's going to need you, or somebody that's an executive is going to need you, right? You've got to find space. So finding time to develop other leaders, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that, because that's something we both truly are passionate about, is we know that everybody's busy, but developing leaders can feel like it's that extra thing that no one has time for. But let's talk a little bit about true development, because you and I chatted about before we hit record, and I know we
Yeah.
both train and coach people on this. True development doesn't happen necessarily just in a classroom, like, oh, I attended that 1 hour training session, so I'm all good, check. It actually happens in the moments leaders are truly in it.
Yeah.
So it's maybe the way we debrief a meeting or a project, or it's in the reflection that you do after something didn't go well. It's in those micro moments that mentorship and development truly happen. And so I'd love to talk a little bit about what have you seen in leadership development that has really aligned with the talent strategy to meet the business needs? Because not everyone's a great mentor. And I'll share first, something that I see all the time, Lori, is leaders saying, I don't have time to develop people, but they're actually surrounded by those opportunities that I just talk about it. They just don't recognize it. So I'll give an example where I worked with a senior manager who was overwhelmed and constantly putting out fires. And she kept saying to me that her team wasn't ready to take on more. So what I suggested to her, well, in your next team meeting, the one where you've got an agenda and you follow it and you run it, what about if you had a different team member lead one portion of that meeting each week? Don't change anything in the agenda. Nothing needs to change. Nothing new needs to happen. But give that person the space to lead and learn and own a piece of that conversation. Practice influencing the room, get exposure, build their own confidence. And I have to say that she had called me, it was like 2, 3 weeks later, and said, I had no idea that they were capable of that. And I was like, of course not, because you controlled everything. And that's what I talk about, the white space. So then her workload decreased. And guess what? Leadership development was happening without even adding a single thing to her calendar. So I'd love to hear around the things that you see, the intentional moments that are, I'm going to call it, baked into what's already happening. What do you see happening in the world that really works for development?
For sure. And it starts for me. I had shared with you earlier today, there was a boss that I had had when I started my career. So I moved to Toronto and took my first big job at Ernst & Young downtown. And I was assigned to work in learning and development. And I was working with this executive director. Her name was Diana Brower. And I was so fortunate to work with somebody who spotted talent, mentored talent, and took the time to make the space. And so having that as like my first boss was fantastic because she showed me what the value is. If you put into somebody, they will come back twofold, threefold. And I don't think I ever would have seen that in myself at that time. I was, just starting out. I didn't know. So to have somebody who actually could see that in me and help foster that in me, it was such a great role model for how do you coach and mentor people going forward. And it's something I always try to do, but sometimes you mess up. My real management of multiple people, I had like a team of 17 reporting in, geographically dispersed across Canada and India, and I didn't make the right decisions around my time. My calendar was exactly like we described. Everything was back to back. I got fortunate to work with some really great people who could, go with minimal direction and come back with great results. And I was so lucky to be able to do that and build that team. But it was doing that where you sort of have that moment of like, I'm not showing up my best self for myself. or my team. No one is growing. We're always feeling under pressure. And to the point you made earlier, it's culture really is top down. Whatever that top person is doing and feeling, it just permeates through everything. And it was really interesting because I was listening to this recent podcast. Brené Brown was a guest, and I think it was Kara Swisher that was interviewing her. And the conversation they was having was specifically around, well, what if you are the best person to do all the work? Like, what if you really are, as the leader, you are the best, fast, most quick, you are the thing. And Brené Brown's response, without even a pause, was, then you don't want to grow or scale. You want to continue to play small. And it stuck with me because that's the lesson that leaders need to hear. It's actually not about you. To the point earlier about servant leadership, you aren't there to get all the accolades and show the thing that you personally can do. If you are a leader, you're there in service of your team. And the culture that you create on your team is that everybody wins together and everybody loses together. And on that team, we can have people with strengths in this and strengths in this. They can be opposite strengths. Leverage the strengths, grow the team, create the space in your calendar so that you can do that because ultimately everybody wins. And it's hard sometimes to shift that because we're taught, when we're in school, there's always the top one in the class and that's what everybody wants to be. What if there's the top five in the class because they all worked really hard together on the project and they all got an A together? That feels better. That kind of sharing in successes feels so much more rewarding when there's others around you as opposed to the sole person. So, as somebody who had a good role model up front, definitely made the missteps with my first really big team. As I reflect back, I can tell you I always hire my opposites. I always have the conversations around, do you want me to take this activity and complete it for you, but not tell you what I did? Do you want me to sit with you so I can show you what I did? And each person wants different things. But if I don't grow the team underneath me, then what is the joy I'm getting out of the work I'm doing as I progress through leadership?
Well, I also look at if you're an individual who wants to grow your career, I see that as being an HR when you talk about succession planning and that, I see that as if you're just doing and you're not developing your team, you're staying the course, where we know businesses expect some growth. And just attending meetings is not the answer. I know so many people who are like, well, I have to go to that meeting because there's so many people there and they're going to see me. Again, if there's no intention behind why you're there and if you're not going to speak, if you're not going to contribute, they're not going to see you. So don't go to that meeting. You're better off to invest time, like you said, with your team, even if it's somebody else, right? Maybe you choose to mentor somebody that's not in your team. But instead of just giving the answers, asking, what do you think the solution would be? Because obviously, even when people used to come to me when I was in HR and they came and they had a problem, I used to say, well, what do you think the solution is? Well, I don't know. Well, you do because you know it's a problem. So if you've identified the problem, trust me, you know what the solution is. And it's helping building those problem-solving muscles. And then too, when you're with your team, instead of just giving them the answer, I know my leader did this with me way back when I would do investigations, make a decision. She always had my back, but then I'd come in and if I had to tell her because I had to part ways with somebody, instead of just saying, here's what you did well, what's the one thing that you learned or might try different next time? And there was always something because that helps you to build that muscle around that developmental, repeatable behavior that you want. And I think those things are so important when you want to grow because then your team's growing, they're willing to take on more, you're freeing up more space to do other stuff. That's when the business sees you as doing this, as opposed to just staying the course.
No, I agree. And I think it's that intentionality, right? It's that if I want to grow, if I want to grow my career, if I want to grow people, then what is the most helpful thing I can do to make sure that we're all coming up that curve together? And to the conversation we had around like conflict too, right? It's that conversation around if the most helpful thing I can do is give really direct feedback, then that's what I need to do. If the most helpful thing I can do is sit down with somebody and go do a page flip on a slide deck, then that's what I'm going to do. If the most helpful thing is to validate somebody's feelings because they're not feeling seen or heard, especially if we get that a lot with employees in HR. What is that helpful thing? Because that's going to make me a better leader and create a better leadership culture around me.
And I was going to say the one thing, I think it was Simon Sinek who said it, and it's not a quote that I have, but as a leader, you want to leave the business and the team in a better place than when you arrived. So what do you need to do that? And sometimes that's driving the culture. And I feel like culture is where all of this shows up, right? It's not by the values on the wall, it's not by the deck that you're going to present, but it's in the way that the behaviors behave every single day and show up. And we talked a little bit about that ahead of time around. I remember when we used to do the training around, okay, well, what did you love about your leader? Like, what kind of leader do you want to be? Oh, you want to be one that listens to your people. You draw a big ear. I want to be somebody who has empathy. Okay, big heart. Well, what is a leader that maybe wasn't horrible, but that you didn't enjoy? And what were they missing, right? And I think that's really where you build trust when you actually just don't say it's the typical, hey, Lori, how are you? Fine. I'm fine. Oh, that's good. And you walk off. It's actually going, hey, Lori, how are you? How was your weekend? What did you do this weekend? It's getting to know your people that is going to be so critical in building culture because those are the individuals that then, if there's a problem or if they hear of a problem, they're willing to come and talk to you about it because they feel like you care. And I feel like if your values are real, anyways, they're going to show up, and we talked about it. They're going to show up in your calendar, your conversations, your decisions, your energy. And when there's a gap between what a leader says and what a team sees, people feel it instantly. And
I mean,
so,
it
like,
like.
one of the things I used to say was the calendar test, and I think I shared this with you ahead of time, is as a leader, go back and look at your calendar the last 2 weeks and see what you did. And does that match your values? And where your time goes, because that'll reveal your priorities.
And building on that, I mean, I always think culture is, I'm generalizing obviously, but it's the worst behaviors that an organization will accept. And if an organization accepts you being overworked, being burnt out, being so focused on the business results that you lose the humanity, is that a place anybody really wants to work? Probably not. But it'll show up for you. Exactly, you said it'll show up in your calendar, it'll show up in your meetings, it'll show up in how employees are compensated, year-end reviews, performance reviews, support for learning and development. None of those things exist in organizations that really have lost a little bit of that humanity. And I think it's so interesting. You know, I talk a lot with a lot of leaders about culture, and some organizations will distill it down to, well, you know, on Fridays, we all order pizza. You're like, that's a great tactic. I love that you do that. And then everybody gets together. Okay. But tell me more about the culture. And they're like, well, we also have a, like, we got great coffee in the kitchen. I think that's terrific. That's a really great tactic that you have. Like, what else do you have? Oh, you know, when we all hotel in desks, before you leave the desk, you need to like wipe it down so you can be kind to the next person. Love that. That's terrific. But then you'll be like, okay, but tell me about a standing meeting that you have in your calendar. Tell me a little bit about how that goes every week. And they'll say, oh, you know what? The boss comes in, he's always late, he's always distracted on his phone, and he's not really listening to what we're saying. And the meetings that were supposed to be like a meaningful 30 minutes with this very busy person have now been distilled to 5 minutes because he's not really listening and probably could just be an email. You're like, okay, so that's what you're telling me about your culture. And I just think it's, we've moved away from how do you have the humanity? How do you build that connection? So, like some of the stories I shared earlier came out of a place where that connection was really necessary. We needed to build trust. We needed to work together. We needed to be empathetic leaders. And now, depending which organization it is and where they are in the spin of the chaos that is our working world, it's really a step back or a step sideways to more of that human connection that we really used to have.
Yeah, and I shared with you ahead of time. I worked for a company where the employee engagement came back and it was, in the 20s and was not good. And so, one of the things that I learned from that early on was If you say something, so then, you know, you do your listening sessions, you build a plan of what needs to be corrected. What can we correct? Well, if you decide that communication transparency is going to be important, let's go with that, because that's a big one for a lot of companies. So what I would do is I would find time in my week and cancel one non-essential meeting and just say, this hour, I'm giving back. And then I would follow up with someone who I thought might be struggling or was pretty transparent with me that I had built a relationship to have that conversation around. Tell me a little bit more around when we say communication transparency, what are people looking for? Help me understand. Because that consistency builds trust faster than just having the narrative of, oh, we need to fix transparency and communication. Well, that's great, but what are you doing about it? And then the other thing I did was I used to actually write just on a post-it note, communication transparency, and I would stick it on my computer. And that would be my culture focus for the quarter, because that one's a big one, right? So it's not like well-being you could do for a shorter time, but that one for a quarter. And how would I bring that up in meetings? How would I bring that up in my interactions with individuals? What did that look like as we were building training sessions for individuals? So that one behavior would define the culture that I was prepared to work on, the task for that quarter, because I felt like culture becomes more visible through repeated small actions. Unfortunately, companies will focus on culture or when the employee engagement is really low. And then when it's good, they take their foot off the gas and then we start to slip again. But I think when individuals see that, feel that, hear that, and they do those two things, you can make such a big impact in such a short time. And again, it's all around intentionality. It doesn't take a ton of work, but you have to be in the right frame of mind to have those open conversations and listen and not be judgmental, not push back, not rebut, right? You're there to listen so that you can in turn do something with that information that you've just gathered. And that's why I've recommended to companies, if you don't have an executive team or an HR team that can do that, you're probably better off getting a third party to come in and do that, because they're going to be judgment free and actually listen to everything. Ideally, somebody in the business knows the ins and outs of the business, but active listening is a skill that a lot of leaders don't have.
And that getting curious, like I love how you described it. That's what you've done, is you've got really curious about not just taking the tip of the waves answer of like, well, we need more transparent communication, but what does that mean? Because we all would interpret that differently. And then you're going to solve a problem that doesn't really exist. And it's not going to get at the heart of it. And the heart of it, the real root cause, is just going to snowball and snowball and snowball. And exactly to your point, I'm not sure, because we're kind of conditioned to, we have to have the right answers right away. We don't take the step back and realize that, like, as leaders, it's better to ask the 15 questions to understand what the real issue is. It's always like that five whys we always talk about. Well, why this, to get to that root, so critical, so that the intervention that you're putting in place matches, so it can solve it. And I love what you're saying about that intentionality, because it is about repetition and consistency. You repeat it, you're consistent about it, it shifts. And people know what to expect every single time. And people like clear expectations and boundaries. You know, we want to be rule breakers all the time and it's wild, but in a workplace, we actually find it easier to have some structure. Understand, if I do this, then this happens. So I really appreciate the story you shared. Just those two pieces are so critical, the intentionality and the curiosity.
Yeah, thank you. It was something that I learned quickly in the leadership role, because you want to make a difference. And I've always cared about employees. It's why I got into HR. And so finding a way to just listen and be curious, because I didn't have all the answers. Some of the things that people were telling me about, I had no clue that that was going on or how to solve for. But it was something for me too, to learn and to maybe offer a different opinion than what was happening in the past. And hopefully I left, like I said, we want to leave the place better than when we got there. So hopefully I did that. So yeah. Okay, we have two other topics because we've talked about one of them already that I want to touch base on. So we're going to almost do mini rapid fire, even though, like I said, each one could be its own episode. I wanted to talk about growth versus cost. Leaders walk that tightrope between tightening budgets and fueling innovation, right? It's that fine line. So let's talk just real quickly about how to protect what truly matters. I think it's people, purpose, and progress. And while making the hard decisions, those have to come into play. How do you see leaders protecting what matters most when everything's being cut?
I think they have to be realistic, which I know is not a popular answer. But I think when that's your, exactly as you said, the people, the process, and your third one was,
People, purpose, and progress. So
those
it's the
things
growth.
are important to you, but you know they're not important to the CEO, or they're not important to the other executive leaders. You're not going to get anywhere. So it's basically saying these three things are important to me, but I work in this construct. So how can I stay true to these values for myself, but know that there is a different set of results that needs to happen? And I think being realistic about what you can achieve in the organization you're in, talking about it with a realistic view, sets a better construct for your team. And the reason I share that is because I think we all want to work on a high-performing team that does amazing thing and has exponential growth, but that's like not really the reality for everybody. So if we talk about it in realistic terms and we look at incremental growth and we discuss with somebody, you know, I know you want to go do this really big thing, but actually we don't have room in our budgets this year for raises and promotions. So let's get creative about what we can do to stretch you, to grow you. I think we spend too much time not having realistic conversations with the group because you would stay true to those three things that are important to you by having that conversation with somebody with the realism of what is the environment that you are in. You're leading with your values, but acknowledging that you're not in a place that can offer, you know, big money to go do some big exciting thing, but you're giving them purpose, you're giving them a process of what they can expect. You're, you know, talking about the progress of their roles. I just think that we don't spend enough time there. We spend time giving people a false sense. And, you know, I don't know if that comes from like, I worked in a lot of really large organizations. And so when I moved into more the private equity space, I had this leader that would say, you know, Lori, your answer is very political. And I'd be like, well, I grew up in spaces where every answer had to be political. And as I thought about what are the leadership cultures I want to create, you can always stay true to yourself, but give a realistic answer.
And I think that is key. Ask the exactly that question that you just said, like what is important, because you can still potentially fight for or find a different solution for, or right, just because the business says you need to cut this. But
Totally.
be super open to looking at, well, what does that mean? Are we looking at reducing headcount? Are we looking at reducing travel?
Yes.
Does that mean we need to get rid of outdated meetings? I used to take people through what we used to call an HR stop, start, continue. What do we no longer need to waste energy and time on, and we can do instead? And maybe if I can sell that and say, well, if we get
Yeah.
rid of this, I can have Lori do this instead, which means she's super valuable to the business because here's the result. They might see it differently too, but when we don't pause to actually think about what is truly a growth driver and what do we see as potential, then we handcuff ourselves and we just do what the business asks us to do.
And I always think that the decisions are, it's a series of trade-offs, right? Every decision is, and I'm not sure we really ask ourselves, what is the trade-off that's in front of us? What are we gaining? What are we losing by the decision? And are we actually really comfortable with what these outcomes are? I think it's easy to say, we're going to cut 21% and bring in AI. Okay. But let's actually just play that out for a minute. What does that look like in practice? Great idea. But in practice, let's talk about what we're losing and gaining with that decision. And there's a bit of that realism that I feel is not existing in a lot of leadership tables because, again, lack of trust, a bit of protectionism. Nobody wants to have that confrontation of saying, but let's get honest and real here.
Yeah. And it's funny you brought up AI because we're not going to get into a debate because I've gone into
Of
debates with
course not.
people. But in the HR space, right, we hear it. Leaders are curious, but they're also terrified of AI at the same time. And I joke about AI and I say, well, garbage in, garbage out. Whatever you put into AI is what you're going to get the output of. But it's not there in my mind to take away the human piece, the logical piece. It's there to help sometimes with clarity, right? So we can either amplify humanity or replace it. Where do you see, so I use AI to clear volume, not value. So where do you see a beneficial and AI playing a role in leadership? Is it an enhancer or a distraction?
So pleased you asked me this. This is so timely. I just wrote an article about this for the AI Journal because I feel really strongly that AI is actually going to make management harder because it's going to make it more human. And it's going to strip away the busy work, right? Between automation, AI, agentic AI, all the stuff that, checking slides to make sure that all the fonts are the same size, making sure that the Excels have all the right formulas, all those little things that people could get caught in the busy work. So when we talk about those really jam-packed calendars, the things that people would be mindlessly having to do goes away. And now you've got leaders who maybe haven't prioritized coaching, mentoring, guiding a team, teaching their team how to do something. And I saw that with some of the leaders I worked with previously, where once we took away that stuff, the leader was a VP and he was like, well, I guess I don't know how to manage my team. I actually don't know what you, why do I have to have one-on-ones? Why would I need a one-on-one? And it's so interesting because I think that that's actually what AI is going to do for us. It's going to unlock a lot of the things we valued, that perfection we valued, goes away. And now we become human beings. And as humans, what makes us unique and special? And how are we there for each other? How do we create community? How do we have empathy? How do we really bring some of those things that a computer can't actually bring to the table? So I'm pretty excited about being able to use AI to smooth out some of that. Is my font correct and my colors match? That's the stuff I don't really want to worry about anymore. I want to worry about, am I creating the right connections with people? Have I helped them today? Are they able to perform their job at peak levels because they've learned the right skills? And I've been patient and kind to help them get there with those skills.
I like it. I think AI should give leaders time back because it takes away those tedious, monotonous scheduling issues, all those kinds of things. Not take away the humanity, but I think to your point, it's going to show the busy work that some leaders have been hiding behind, that all of a sudden they're not going to be sure what to do. And I joke too, if you think AI is replacing your thinking, you're doing it wrong.
Yes.
If it's freeing your thinking, then you're doing it right. It's there to free your time. It's not there to replace because it'll never replace your experience, your knowledge. It just can't. So, yeah. Thank you. But yeah, there's been a lot of conversation around AI, not AI. And I'm the same. I will throw a document into AI and say, take a look at this, spell check it from this kind of lens. Let me know if you think I'm missing anything. But I've created the document. I go back and I adapt it because it's me. It's interesting. Lori, this has been such a great conversation. And I think there's one thing leaders need to hear. It's that you don't have to have it all figured out, right? You and I talked a lot about that. You just need to show up with intention, presence, trust, and honesty. When I say trust, going back to a leader, somebody said, well, how do I get your trust? And his response was, you have my trust, it's yours to lose. That was just so powerful. So, any last words from you, or what would you like to share about how people can find out more about Lori or sign up for any of the fun things that you've got on your plate?
I always love these conversations. There's more to come, 2026. I feel really excited about the year ahead. But you can find me on LinkedIn and my impact list. I post every week honoring some of the folks who have really helped to shape my career. But I have a website too that you can always go and book time with me on. I'm happy to chat with anybody who's curious about unlocking more around conflict resolution and team and organizational coaching. So really appreciate the opportunity to come and share perspectives today.
That was fun. I enjoyed that. I wanted to do it more of a coffee chat. Like, let's talk about this. It was fun to talk about a number of things because I feel like there's so much going on right now. Somebody will find a piece somewhere that will help them. And I'll leave our listeners with this. Leadership isn't about perfection. It's about awareness. It's about noticing when you're slipping into overwhelm and pausing long enough to recalibrate and choose to lead from calm instead of chaos. And if you can practice that one thing, you'll change how your team feels because they'll see it and feel it, how decisions land for you, and how you can experience your own leadership and grow yourself. So when this episode ends, I encourage you to do one thing. I want you to pause, take 60 seconds, and ask yourself this one question: where can I lead from calm today instead of chaos? Thanks again, Lori. I appreciate you being here. Thanks for tuning in to today's Balanced Leader. If you want to go even deeper, then visit my website at carolinebarrett.com, find some free resources, and look at all the different ways that I can support you to become your best self. Remember, change begins with just one small step. It's those tiny actions that start you on the path to achieving your dreams and finding balance. And as always, life is an experience, so take a moment to enjoy the journey and appreciate the progress you make along the way. Until next time, keep taking those small steps, savor the journey, and lead with courage and authenticity. This is Caroline reminding you to stay bold, stay balanced, and keep moving confidently towards your dreams.